Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello there, Herman and Corin. So we mentioned in a previous episode, or we talked about the kind of weird idea, but incredibly relevant at the moment, which is why I think we should talk a little bit more about it, of what's called content authenticity. Content authenticity was the rapid rise of generative AI. Many are going to find themselves, if not now, in a few years, at some point faced with an unfounded allegation from someone that says, that's just AI generated. I mentioned that I was involved in water falling from my roof, a leak that became this really messy situation with the landlord. And maybe it was for the better because I stumbled upon this world, and I never would have thought about it if the landlord had not alleged at one point that this is AI generated trickery. And I'm like, wait, you actually think that I'm like using AI to generate a photo of mold? And then I thought to myself, well, that's going to be a big thing. So we've talked about AI invisible fingerprinting, and it's a very interesting topic, but that's really not enough. The lack of a fingerprint doesn't prove necessarily that something wasn't AI generated. And that's where content authenticity is kind of the, I think, going to entrench itself very quickly as the best practice and the best standard. So a group that is really important in this respect is the CAI. I think I mentioned that content authenticity sounds kind of Orwellian, and I think it's a little bit funny that the CAI ended up with an acronym that's just one letter, two letters in the reverse order. It gives you the CIA, but they are the CAI, and they've been active in a number of domains, including forming an industry consortium with the participation of Sony and a couple of others. And they also recommend resources. And one of the ones they recommend, which I haven't stopped recommending in turn to others since this whole episode in my life began, and which will pass over very soon. But that's called Proof Mode. Proof Mode is an app that you can download onto any Android or iOS device, and for all intents and purposes it functions just like any other camera app. You take photos and videos in it, but the difference is that it allows you then to export these as zips, and it's embedding in the photos and videos it takes metadata, a lot of metadata, and verification. So this is software level, right? Because we're just using our existing devices. And the next level is hardware level. And they keep a list of C2PA approved devices. So this standard for authenticity is open source, and they have an SDK for those who are involved in software development kit. And the SDK is available in Python, Rust, and all different languages. So it's in the open, which is good. But my question really, Herman and Corin, and we talked about things like hardware level authentication devices. At the physical layer, we have some security mechanisms like chassis protection. But if we just keep our focus here on content authenticity demonstration, what do you think? Where are we going to round out here? Because these apps are great and they're convenient, but do you think it's fair to say they're only a stepping stone towards hardware level verification? And that hardware level signing, I think, to me, that always sounds like the gold standard if we're talking about stuff that's tamper proof. But of course, I think what comes out of all our discussions about security is that even the things that sound impossible to manipulate, there's always going to be someone who'll try to do exactly that. So my question, Herman and Corin, is firstly, do you think it's fair to say that how valid or what legitimacy do you think can be attached already to software level authentication. Authenticity verification. To me, I think that the standard of the burden of proof and the standard of proof that's going to be placed upon a private individual to prove that in a fairly low stakes environment, like that a photo of, let's take a tenancy dispute again, that, you know, maybe a hole in the ceiling or a broken floor or whatever the case may be is authentic, has to be somewhat reasonable. And I would, if I were recommending, you know, this app to someone, I would say, I think you're going to be ahead of the majority of people by just doing this. But then we have very different levels of evidence required by people whose job it is to collect evidence, people like law enforcement. And for them, I imagine, and this is where I ask you, is it the case that hardware level is always necessary? We see here in Israel and around the world now, police officers wearing body cams that sometimes, and this footage they're constantly recording, can be admitted in court. Is it the case that those body cams are always going or always doing or always will be doing authenticity certification? And I think that's enough questions today for you, Herman and Korn. So let's talk about content authenticity, the work of the Content Authenticity Initiative in forming an industry consortium to create the first major push towards creating a mechanism for proving reality beyond a reasonable technical doubt. Over to you, Herman and Korn.
Have you ever had that unsettling feeling that the ground is shifting under your feet? Not literally, though living here in Jerusalem, we do get the occasional tremor. I am talking about the conceptual ground, the feeling that the very idea of evidence is evaporating. I was thinking about this all morning after listening to the audio our housemate Daniel sent over. He had this nightmare scenario with a leaky roof and a landlord who tried to claim a photo of mold was AI generated. It sounds like a plot from a sci-fi movie, but it is actually just Tuesday in 2026.
Herman Poppleberry here, and Korn, you are hitting on the exact nerve that has been twitching in the tech community for the last couple of years. Daniel is really onto something with this prompt. It is what researchers call the liar's dividend. It is the idea that as soon as deepfakes and generative AI become common, anyone caught doing something wrong can simply point to the evidence and say, that is not real, it is just a computer simulation. It creates a vacuum of truth where the default assumption shifts from seeing is believing to seeing is suspicious.
It is a terrifying shift. If you cannot prove a photo of a leaky roof is real, how do you prove anything? Daniel mentioned the Content Authenticity Initiative, or CAAI, and this standard called C2PA. I have seen that little CR icon popping up on more images lately. It is starting to feel like the nutrition label for the internet, but I want to really dig into the mechanics today. Is this actually going to save our sense of reality, or is it just another layer of digital cat and mouse?
Well, the CAA is a massive consortium. You've got Adobe, Microsoft, TruePic, and even some of the big camera manufacturers like Sony and Leica. The goal is to create a permanent, tamper-evident record of where a piece of content came from and how it was changed. It is called provenance. Think of it like a digital chain of custody that is baked into the file itself.
Okay, so let us start with what Daniel was using. He mentioned proof mode. That is a software level tool. If I'm using an app like that on my phone to take a photo of a leaky roof, what is actually happening under the hood? How is that different from just a regular JPEG with a timestamp?
That is a great place to start. A regular photo has what we call EXIF data. That tells you the shutter speed, the date, and maybe the GPS coordinates. But the problem is that EXIF data is incredibly easy to fake. I could open a photo in a basic hex editor and change the date to 1999 if I wanted to. Software-level verification like proof mode goes much deeper. When you take a photo in an app like that, it captures a massive burst of sensor data and environmental metadata. It looks at the cell towers you are connected to, the Wi-Fi networks in range, the barometric pressure, and even the light sensor readings.
So it is creating a fingerprint of the physical moment, not just the image.
Exactly. And then it takes all that data and creates a cryptographic hash. A hash is basically a digital signature that is unique to that specific set of data. If even one pixel in that photo is changed, or if one digit of the GPS coordinate is altered, the hash will no longer match. The app then signs that hash with a private key that is unique to your device.
This is where we get into the federal rules of evidence that Daniel was curious about. In the United States, for example, Federal Rule of Evidence 902 covers self-authenticating evidence.
Right. I remember reading about that. Usually, you need a witness to stand up in court and say, I took this photo and it is accurate. But 902 allows certain records to be admitted without a witness if they have a certified digital signature.
Precisely. Rules 902.13 and 14 were specifically added to handle things like forensic copies of hard drives and electronic data. Software like Proof Mode is designed to meet that standard. It creates a bundle of evidence that a lawyer can take to a judge and say, this file has not been altered since the moment it was captured, and here is the mathematical proof.
But here is my concern, Herman. If it is just software, is it not still vulnerable? If I'm a sophisticated actor, can I not just spoof the software? Can I not feed the Proof Mode app a fake video stream or fake GPS coordinates from a rooted phone?
You have hit the nail on the head. That is the fundamental limitation of software-only verification. You are trusting the operating system. If the Android or iOS kernel is compromised, or if you are running the app in an emulator, you can feed it whatever lies you want. The software will faithfully sign those lies, and you end up with a perfectly verified, high-integrity fake. This is why many experts see software-level tools as a vital first step, but not the final destination.
Which leads us to the hardware-level verification. Daniel asked if hardware is the gold standard. We are starting to see this in professional cameras now, right? I know Leica was the first to really jump on this with the M11P.
Yes, the Leica M11P was the pioneer. It has a dedicated security chip inside the camera body. When the light hits the sensor and the image processor creates the raw file, that security chip immediately signs the data. This happens before the data even reaches the memory card or any external software. It is what we call a hardware root of trust. Sony followed suit not long after. They released firmware updates for the Alpha 1, the Alpha 7S Mark III, and the Alpha 9 Mark III to support C2PA.
So in those cases, the camera itself is saying, I am a physical device. I saw this light at this time, and I am signing it with a key that is physically burned into my silicon. You cannot spoof that by rooting a phone because the key never leaves the secure enclave of the camera.
Exactly. It creates a much higher barrier for fraud. To fake a hardware-signed image, you would essentially have to physically hack the chip or build a sophisticated optical rig to project an AI-generated image onto the camera sensor in real time. It is not impossible, but it is orders of magnitude harder than clicking a button in a software suite.
That makes sense for a professional photographer or a journalist in a war zone. But what about the average person? Most of us are not carrying $5,000 Leicas. We are using our phones. Is this coming to the hardware in our pockets?
It is already starting. Qualcomm and Apple have been members of these consortia for a while. Modern smartphones already have secure enclaves and TEEs, which are trusted execution environments. These are the same chips that handle your Face 1-2 and your credit card information for mobile payments. The infrastructure is there. The next step, which we are starting to see in 2026, is integrating the camera pipeline directly into that secure enclave.
So, eventually, every photo I take on my phone could have a C2PA seal of approval by default. But that brings up a huge privacy question, does it not? If every photo is cryptographically linked to my specific device and my location, am I not just creating a perfect tracking tool for myself?
That is the big tension. The CAI has tried to address this by making the metadata optional or redactable. You can prove a photo is real without necessarily revealing exactly where you were or who you are. You can use what is called a zero-knowledge proof or just a partial disclosure. For example, you could prove the photo was taken in Jerusalem on January 30th without revealing the exact street address. But you are right to be cautious. Any system built to prove truth can also be used to enforce surveillance.
It is a delicate balance. I want to go back to the high-stakes environments Daniel mentioned, law enforcement and body cams. This seems like the most obvious use case. If a police officer is involved in a shooting, the public needs to know that the footage has not been edited or deepfaked by the department. Is this actually happening yet?
It is in the transition phase. Companies like Axon, which is the big player in the body cam space, have joined the C2PA steering committee. They are working on integrating these standards into their entire ecosystem. Think about the chain of custody. Right now, we rely on a secure upload from the camera to a cloud server like evidence.com, but with C2PA, the footage is signed the second it is recorded. Even if it sits on a thumb drive in a drawer for a week, you can verify its integrity later.
That seems like it should be mandatory. If we have the technology to prove a video is untampered, why would we ever accept anything less in a courtroom?
Well, there is the cost and the legacy hardware problem. Police departments are not known for being quick to upgrade their tech. There are hundreds of thousands of older body cams in service that do not have the hardware to support this. We are likely looking at a decade-long transition. But in 2026, we are seeing the first precinct starting to require C2PA compliance for all new equipment. It is becoming a benchmark for transparency.
I wonder about the defense side of that, though. If hardware-level signing becomes the gold standard, does that mean any evidence that does not have it is automatically seen as fake? If I am a bystander who records police misconduct on an older phone that does not support C2PA, will a jury just ignore it because it lacks the digital seal of approval?
That is a brilliant point, Korn, and it is something that civil liberties groups are very worried about. It is called the technology gap. If we create a world where only verified content is trusted, we might inadvertently silence the people who cannot afford the latest verified devices. It could create a two-tiered system of truth. The official story is verified by expensive hardware, while the grassroots story is dismissed as unverified noise.
We saw something similar with the transition to high-definition video. People started to think that if a video was grainy, it was somehow less authentic, even though graininess is often a sign of a real low-light situation. Now we are moving from visual aesthetics to cryptographic aesthetics.
Exactly, and this is why software-level tools like Proof Mode are so important. They provide a middle ground. They might not be as bulletproof as a dedicated security chip in a Leica, but they are accessible to anyone with a smartphone. They allow a regular person to add a layer of credibility to their evidence without needing a specialized device. It is about democratizing the ability to prove reality.
I think we should talk about the role of the platforms here. Adobe has been the big driver behind this, which is interesting because Photoshop is the tool everyone blames for fake images in the first place. It is like the company that made the lock is now making the key.
It is a smart move by them. They have integrated content credentials directly into Photoshop. When you edit an image, the software keeps a log of what you did. If you used an AI tool to fill in a background or change someone's hair color, that is recorded in the metadata. When you export the file, you can attach those credentials. Then, when someone sees that image on a news site or social media, they can click that little CR icon and see exactly how the image was altered.
But that only works if the platforms support it. If I upload a verified photo to a social media site, and that site strips out all the metadata to save space, the chain of trust is broken.
That has been the biggest hurdle. Most social media platforms have historically stripped EXIF data for privacy and storage reasons, but we are starting to see a shift. Some platforms are beginning to recognize C2P. A manifests and display that authenticity badge. They realize that in a world of AI hallucinations, being the platform that can prove what is real is a huge competitive advantage.
It is basically a new form of the blue checkmark. Instead of verifying the person, we are verifying the pixels. But we saw how the blue checkmark system fell apart when it became a pay-to-play scheme. Is there a risk of that here?
The difference is that C2PA is an open standard. It is not owned by one company. Anyone can build a tool to verify these manifests. You do not have to pay a monthly fee to a billionaire to have your photos cryptographically signed. You just need a device or an app that follows the protocol. That open source nature is what gives me hope that it will not just become another corporate gatekeeping tool.
I want to go back to Daniel's specific situation. Let us say he uses Proof Mode to document the mold from the leaky roof. He goes to court against his landlord. The landlord says, that is AI. Daniel's lawyer pulls up the Proof Mode bundle. How does a judge who might not be tech-savvy actually interpret that? Do we need a new breed of digital forensic experts to explain these hashes to a jury?
We already have them, but their jobs are about to get a lot busier. In a case like that, the lawyer would likely use a verification tool. There are websites where you can drop a file, and it will check the C2PA manifest against the public keys of the manufacturer or the software provider. It gives you a green checkmark and a simple explanation. The goal of the CAI is to make it so simple that a judge or a juror can understand it without a degree in computer science. It is like a notary seal. You do not need to understand the chemistry of the ink or the physics of the stamp to know that a notarized document is official.
That is a good analogy. But a notary seal can still be forged. It just takes a lot of effort. It feels like we are in this perpetual race where the fakes get better, so the verification has to get stronger, which then challenges the fakers to get even better. Does this race ever end?
Probably not. It is the nature of security. But what we are doing with C2PA is raising the floor. Right now, the floor is so low that a teenager with a free AI tool can create a convincing fake. By implementing these standards, we are making it so that creating a convincing, verified fake requires state-level resources. It does not eliminate the problem, but it makes it much harder to do at scale.
And scaling is the real danger. One deepfake is a problem, but a million deepfakes is a catastrophe for democracy. If we can at least verify the work of professional journalists and official records, we can maintain a baseline of shared reality.
Exactly. It is about protecting the signal in the noise. One of the most interesting developments I have seen lately is how this is being used in citizen journalism. There is a project called Starling Lab, which is a collaboration between Stanford and USC. They have been using these tools to document potential war crimes. They use a combination of hardware-level signing, decentralized storage on things like Filecoin, and even recording the hashes onto a blockchain.
That is intense. Using a blockchain to preserve the history of a war zone. It makes sense, though. If you want to create a record that is truly permanent and tamper-proof, you have to move beyond a single server or a single company.
Right. They call it a framework of trust. You have the capture layer, which is the camera signing the data. You have the storage layer, which is decentralized so no government can delete it. And you have the verification layer, which is the open standard that anyone can check. It is a complete reimagining of how we preserve history in the digital age.
It makes me think about episode 151, where we talked about why high-speed internet can still feel slow. It was all about the bottlenecks in the system. In the world of content authenticity, the bottleneck is not the technology, it is the trust. We have the math to prove things are real, but do we have the social structures to believe the math?
That is the million-dollar question. You can show someone a green check mark and a cryptographic proof, but if they are determined to believe a lie, no amount of math will change their mind. We are building the technical tools for truth, but the psychological tools are still lagging behind.
So, to answer Daniel's question, software-level verification is a vital tool for the masses, but hardware-level signing is the necessary backbone for high-stakes truth. We are likely moving toward a world where your phone does this automatically, but we have to be vigilant about the privacy and accessibility implications.
Well said. It is not a silver bullet, but it is the best shield we have against the coming storm of synthetic content. We are moving from an era of blind trust to an era of verified provenance. It is going to be a bumpy ride, but at least we have a map.
I think that is a good place to wrap up our core discussion. But before we go, I want to make sure we give some practical advice for people like Daniel, who might be facing these accusations right now. If you are in a situation where you need to prove your content is real, what should you do?
First, if you know you are in a high-stakes situation, like a legal dispute or a sensitive reporting job, start using a verification app immediately. Proof Mode is excellent and open source. There is also an app called TruePic Lens that is very highly regarded in the professional space. These apps create a bundle of metadata that is much harder to dismiss in court than a standard photo.
And if you are buying new equipment, especially for professional use, check for C2PA support. It is becoming a standard feature in high-end cameras, and it likely won't be long before it is a selling point for smartphones too. Also, keep your original files. Never just keep the version you uploaded to social media. The original file has the most metadata and the highest integrity.
Great point. And for the listeners who are just browsing the web, start looking for that CR icon. Adobe has a website called Verify where you can upload any image to see if it has content credentials. It is a great way to train your own eye to look for provenance.
This has been such a fascinating deep dive. Daniel, thanks again for sending this in. It is one of those topics that feels a bit technical until it suddenly becomes very personal, like with your leaky roof. I hope the landlord eventually backed down when he saw you knew your stuff.
Yeah, nothing scares a difficult landlord like a tenant who understands cryptographic hashes. Before we sign off, I want to remind everyone that we love hearing from you. If you have a weird prompt of your own, or if you have thoughts on the reality crisis we discussed today, head over to myweirdprompts.com and use the contact form.
And if you've been enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It genuinely helps other curious minds find us in the sea of content. We are on episode 365 now, and it is the support of this community that keeps us going.
It really does. We have come a long way since those early episodes, and we have got a lot more rabbit holes to explore. Remember, you can find all our past episodes and more information at our website.
Thanks for joining us in the house today. This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. We will see you in the next one.
Stay curious and keep questioning the pixels. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.